Hello and welcome to the Record Swappers. My name is Gabriel, or Excessive Prophet, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always.
And I'm Viking. And yeah. I'm gonna end it like that, because I'm gonna end this trope.
You're the unlucky bandit. It will be forever ingrained into our podcast history.
Okay.
So yeah, today we're gonna talk about a little Robert Johnson, finally. Who happens to be the king of the Delta Blues. But first, how have you been, Viking? Oh, yes, of course, drink that water. That seductive slurp into the mic, yes. Now you can tell me with water done.
Yeah, I'm good. I've been going back and forth from sickness and stuff
down
like
in
that.
Sickness. Yeah.
Every time I mention this, you do the same joke.
But it's a classic.
Yeah, but it's also bad.
It's also a classic. Classics are sometimes bad.
Yes. So moving on to, how are you?
I'm fine. We had an IKEA run, so and I just got my calyx for my finals up.
Me? I created a bigger calyx.
Yeah. It's going to be crazy. I mean, like, I probably can't even fill, like, 3 to 4. That's what I used to fill in an 8 calyx. Now I have like 12 slots. I'm like, I'm going to use the old calyx for books, I guess. And the new one is only for vinyls. That means so much money for vinyls.
That means we need to go and crate dig some more.
Yeah, that's the devil. That's probably.
It's me the same. I created for a 4 to 8. So now I have both a 4 and an 8 to fill with vinyl.
So you have a 12.
I have a 12 also.
If you just super gloom through. Yeah, otherwise I've been good. I've been having catching up on doing the stuff with all the vinyl and at home. So it's good. And also I've been into a little rewatching a show called Supernatural that actually has an episode about Robert Johnson. So that's kind of funny.
Okay.
Because it's about the supernatural. Yeah.
Is it about the devil at the crossroad?
Kind of. It's a demon, though, in that episode. So it's kind of, I've been re-watching that. And I also, with you, watched a little movie called Crossroads. And we're going to talk about Robert Johnson, but we have to start talking about a little movie called Crossroads.
Yes.
And then, like, segment in.
Yeah.
So, Viking, what is the movie Crossroads?
It's like, imagine Karate Kid.
Yes, because it has Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, but with blues.
Yes, of
course. Instead of karate.
Yes, no crane.
It's the blues kid.
Yeah, the blues kids. The lightning boy.
It's like, instead of... It's like, instead of appropriating Ralph Macchio's white kid appropriating Asian culture.
African American culture. Much worse, maybe, or much better, actually. It's an amazing movie. So basically, it's a 1986 movie, the same year that Karate Kid 2 came out, and Ralph Macchio did this with some actors called Tim Russ from Star Trek, who we love as Robert Johnson, even for a short while, and Joe Sinica and Steve Vai as the bad guy. And we're gonna play a trailer for it, actually, because I found the trailer.
Oh my God.
So we're going to play that. And then we're going to go into Robert Johnson. And that's all you're going to get. And the homework is you have to watch the movie. And if we get 3 billion likes, views, everything on every social media, we'll do a Crossroads episode, right?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not 3 billion, but like we'll set a goal around 30 to 50. If we get like 30 to 50 views in February, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Here comes the trailer.
Well, not February, because that's almost over.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, the other month.
In March.
Yeah, in March. That's how time works, guys. Yeah. Here comes a little trailer.
Now, you want to play like Robert Johnson? You want to play like Petey Wheatstraw? Say goodnight to your soul, son.
It's see you in hell, blind boy.
Mr. Brown made it very clear he doesn't want to see anyone.
Kemp. Mr. Fulton.
Mr. Who?
I'm a blues man.
A blues man? You, where are you from?
I was born in Long Island. Why?
Long Island. Oh, shit, this is rich. Long Island, the famous breeding ground for blues men.
Most people approach Mozart with respect.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean any disrespect. I was just making a joke.
Gee, get me out of here.
What?
Hey!
So, we're over. We're gonna jump into Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
Because that's the best segue we could have had. So we're gonna talk about Robert Johnson and the King of the Delta Blues Singers. Yeah. Volume 1.
Yeah.
Innocence. But technically it wasn't named that, so King of the Delta Blues Singers.
But it's Volume 1.
So, let's go through your first impressions.
My first impressions?
No, your first impressions.
It's kind of, I mean, like.
Do you want me to tell you a story, by the way, why I chose this album?
Yeah.
Because I don't think I told it, or maybe I mentioned it, but this was supposed to be the actual first episode of this podcast ever.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know, but it's because I watched the show Constantine with Matt Ryan, and they had an episode about the haunted vinyl. Basically because of a certain guy sold his soul. And I'm like, wink, wink. So same as Supernatural. And I just started going into all the lore and all the urban myths that we're going to get into a little today about Robert Johnson. And I'm like, this is so interesting. And it's so intriguing that this guy made so... He didn't have so much time or so much songs, but he impacted a lot. And also the urban myth is kind of fun in all the videos and stuff. So yeah. That's the reason. But what was your first impressions?
I mean, it's incredible music. I know it's so hard to talk about his music in a sense.
Yeah, because to be honest, when you listen to it first time and you don't listen, you're just like, oh, it's kind of boring. But it's also because where we are today, and also when you don't. It's with all the music we do, but especially this, because it has a different time. There's some connotations and words we don't really understand because it's in the 30s.
Yeah.
So like a couple of things he says, I didn't really like think about it for what it really means. Mm. Even if it's a funny meaning or like a actually has a lot of emotion behind it, which some of them do. So yeah, I would say it was a little boring in a sense, but when you get into it, it's kind of...
Yeah, but I mean like...
But it's
like pure blues, so it's kind of it has this feeling of like it has the feeling of like when you don't really listen to it, it has the like it sounds like all the billion of people that copied it, and it's like,
especially like we've heard it now in different ways today. Mm. If you would have heard that first, it would have been different.
But when you when you get down to brass tacks, it's really incredible music.
Yeah, I feel sorry for everybody, everything else that isn't brass, like bronze and gold and titanium. They can't beat tacks. It's only brass that can beat tacks.
Anyway,
so let's get into who Robert Johnson was. So he was, for everybody who doesn't know, he was born in 1911 and died in 1938, which made him 27, which we'll get into later. He was born in America. I don't remember exactly. I didn't write like down all the places he was born and kicked around, but basically born in America, famous blues singer, songwriter, and musician. And he was a musician that was fluent in the or master of the Delta blues style. And he did these recordings for these and the other 29 songs he did in 1946 and 1947, which were made onto 78 RPM records. Do we can still like have 78s and play them, right? If you would buy them secondhand and stuff, if you had a gramophone?
Yeah, you need the special equipment.
Yeah, but it is possible. But they don't make them anymore, right?
No.
Yeah.
Because I think he's also, the ones he did was the shellac kind, and they are made of like, I don't remember the thing they use, but it's very brittle.
Yeah,
so it breaks very easily.
Yeah, so it's hard to make, but they were preserved, and later it was made into this album that we're gonna come to in. But also, I just wanted to like say this off the top, because some people would maybe listen to our episodes sometimes, maybe for some reason without music. I know I've like dip my toe in like, oh, I want to hear something about the show, and I'll listen to the spoiler free or something. So for everybody like at the top, this man Robert Johnson only recorded 29 songs, lived to the age of 27, only has like at least verified 2 pictures in his life, and affected basically most music today. So that's kind of crazy, and we're gonna delve into that incredible today. So what makes Robert Johnson so famous, Viking, except his, at least now we know, his music skills and singing skills? What is there a certain other thing?
Well, the story behind his him learning to play the guitar.
The devil music.
Yeah.
Guitar is the devil. Kathy Bates, Getting Back. So yeah, do you have anything about the deal with the devil? Did you write something down? No. Did you do your homework?
Yeah, well, I did my homework.
Oh, so good.
But I haven't written anything down.
Okay.
Because I thought you would tell all the things.
Of course. So he's not only Robert Johnson. No. He's my friend, so I'll call him Bob from now on. So as a young man, Bob wanted to become a blues musician. He was okay at playing the harmonica. He got, because you could have that around in your pocket, even though he didn't want to work the fields. He had it with him and probably play some music. But later in life, when he got a little older, he was instructed to take his instrument, his guitar, which was because he used to sneak in and play guitar from some guys like Sunhouse and so. So later he was instructed by somebody to go to a crossroads at midnight with his guitar, where he was met. And this is by a lot of people has said the same thing, where he was met by a large black man, the devil, with air bunnies around, who took the guitar and tuned it. The devil played a few songs and then gave Johnson back the guitar, and he suddenly had mastery of the guitar. But does that sound plausible to you?
I mean, I would like it to be true.
Then we could be like, yeah, I'll sell my soul. Famous for podcasting? Yes, please.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I like, like the event. I like the story that Sun House tells. You can. He does it both in.
Yeah.
Like we watched two documentaries.
Yeah, two documentaries. One with Danny Glover, Donald Glover's son. Yeah. And
what is it called?
That one. Yeah, it's called The Wind Howl or something. I don't remember.
Oh, God. We're bad at this.
But the one on Netflix is called Remastered. Devil at Cross. Oh, do you have sound on your phone? Oh, you're the worst. but I'm. Yes, Sun House, a famous blues musician, he talks about a story in that interview in these documentaries.
Yeah.
Where he talks about Robert getting up to and taking their guitar on stage when him and I think Charlie Patton laid them down and he would practice.
Willie Brown.
And he would practice and he would make such a racket that everybody shouted at him and said, you're making us mad. So Sunhouse like shooed him away.
Mm.
And later, like maybe around 6 months to a year, most people say he came back to where they played music and he said, can I just play one? Hey, Sunhouse, can I like tinkle the guitar a little? Like, and he's like, no, you'll just make everybody mad. He's like, give me a shot, and everybody was wowed. So yeah.
So the name of that documentary with Donald Glover is "Can't You Hear the Wind Howl?"
Did you say Donald Glover? I think you did. That's what I heard in these headphones.
I'm sorry, Danny Glover.
Yeah. Can you hear the wind howl?
Yeah,
and the
life and music of Robert Jones. Yeah,
and the other one is remastered Devil at the Crossroads on Netflix. But if you don't buy into the devil myth, how did Robert Johnson go from making a racket and making everybody mad to learning the guitar? He practiced with a man
called Ike Zimmerman.
Yes, at graveyards around the area. Where no one would disturb them, and Ike Zimmerman would show him how he played, and he would just copy and do it. And Johnson spent, like I said, around a year learning from Zimmerman. So you can, like, take your pick. So Robert Johnson, he was also, because everybody heard that he played in funerals, and they thought he sold his soul to the devil, they segmented more his story.
Graveyards, you mean?
Yeah, sorry. you know what I meant.
Now I see him performing at funerals.
I mean, could have worked.
It could have worked.
Especially if he's the devil's child. But also, so this perpetuated a great urban myth, and that's what I said at the top, like in Supernatural and Constantine and the movie Crossroads, there's a whole big thing with this.
Mm.
Like in Crossroads, they have Willie Brown, the character they. Even though that's not based on the real selling the soul. And it's a big thing, and that's why we're mentioning it now.
Yeah, and I think like that also spread like to the song, the famous concert song, The Devil Goes Down to Georgia.
Yeah, I think so too.
And stuff like that. And like, Tenacious D's...
Pick of Destiny.
Tribute. Yeah, Tribute is pretty much like a.
Was it the first Tribute before they got the good music video that it was Dave Grohl who was the devil?
Yeah, Dave Grohl.
Yeah, that's so crazy to me.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, I'll play a devil, sure.
Yeah,
he's down for anything. So yeah, and except for his life, even his death was shrouded in mystery.
Yeah.
It was said that he was killed by poison by a jealous boyfriend from one of the ladies he wooed. He was quite the ladies' man, history says. And some say this poison was even strychnine poisoning in the beginning. Mm. So maybe he was searching for an antidote. Mm. But most people seem to think it was maybe syphilis and the heavy amount of alcohol he would drink.
I also read the theory about it being like bad moonshine.
Yeah, because that's what I mean, like bad moonshine and then syphilis, because he was a ladies' man, if you... So yeah. And so there's a lot of myth and legend shrouded by him. And there's also specifics about this, like there is more than just the aspect of him going down to a crossroads and playing in cemeteries that made people think he had made a deal with the devil. Because he didn't only gain guitar skills and play like nobody else could, but also it was said that he could hear songs on the radio while talking to somebody and replay and sing it as it was. Mm. So a lot of people hereby say maybe he has perfect pitch nowadays. Like he could hear something and play it again straight as like a photographic memory for pitches. And also, of course, his guitar skills were amazing, but also his voice. He sang in a certain way with his voice, which is he used something called microtones, which is between the keys of a guitar. There's a certain tone, and there's a music YouTube video that we're gonna play a little. Because it does actually, this person who have we're not on our A game today.
No.
Because I forget his name. This is a video from a YouTube lady. I can multitask.
Okay.
There. Let's see. So yeah, this lady is, I think maybe she's a vocal coach also, but she is at least a musician. Amy Nolte Music on YouTube. We're gonna credit and link her. But she talks about a certain guy called Jacob Collier today who sings like this.
Mm.
And we're gonna play a clip from her that explains a little, because she can play it on the piano and sing, which we can't. So it's gonna be a little easier in a sense, because it's kind of a hard subject to understand, I think, like the first time go through.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's like going, it's like studying atoms in like physics.
Yeah, sure, I kind of understand.
But for music.
But like, I don't.
It's like,
so yeah.
I kind of understand molecules, but
it's like, really.
But not really.
So we're going to play a clip from her that we learned. So we're going to do it in a one and a two and a three.
What's a microtone in the first place? Do you know? It's in between the cracks on the piano. It's in between that. So if you sing the F sharp, and slide your way to a G, that space right in there, those are microtones. Right in there, that space that we can't really define.
So we are back. So it's kind of interesting, because we talked about, like, does he sing like this on purpose, or is it just a natural born talent?
Mm.
And especially like the whole aspect, everybody cares about the aspect he could play guitar better, but I wonder if he always could sing like that without his deal to the devil. Mm. Kind of interesting. And the last thing is also the aspect of the guitar.
Mm.
When you listened to the guitar, did you notice something? Like, what did you think, like, of his guitar skills? Because you listen to a lot of, like, rock music with good guitars during your day. So, yeah. Like, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I think he has a, like in most songs, he has this, like, You really notice him taking like the chords and like making like the thing that people said, like, was his recording sounded like there were multiple guitars.
Yeah,
recording.
Like Keith Richards did.
Yeah, and that feeling I get also, that's an incredible feat on a, like, and acoustic guitar.
Yeah, the piano, like a lot of in the, especially like Can You Hear the Wind Howl? Mm. Because they interview a lot of the old people that played or saw Johnson, said that he got that piano sound because he was doing so many things at the same time. But a lot of people say that's maybe because he had such long fingers, which you can see in the two photos where he's one with the cigarette and the other one where he's in the famous pinstripe. He has like I mean, Viking has longer fingers than me, right?
Yeah.
But Robert Johnson is probably like twice.
Yeah, I mean, he could. I tried to play guitar and I can't even get my fingers around it.
I used to play guitar and I don't understand how you just hold like a slide. What's it called? A glass slide or whatever they have like on the little finger.
Oh, yeah.
And then they like hold that and then slide. And on this side, they go up and down and the hand pluck. Yeah. With, it's just amazing that.
Yeah.
And then Robert Johnson having like such long fingers, being able to hold something at the top and the bottom at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's crazy. So yeah, no. So all these things I'm taking at the top normally, then discussing these when we get to the songs, because I think a lot of people today don't know his name actively, especially young people, and know how much he's impact the music. And I just want to get these things off the top for everybody who like maybe listen through the album like on a light listen, which some people like, oh, I want to see what you're talking about and understand, I'll listen lightly. But this is why I'm putting it at the top, because and I'm trying to get you Viking and the audience to understand like why I picked this, because it's so fascinating that he just, I didn't know first he had long fingers. I just heard he played it in a different way and that impacted music. I heard that he played very much like with his right hand at the top near the capo, and like at the bottom he did all these like chugga chugga hand plucking and then kept I just thought that was fascinating, but now I know more and it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah. But I think that's all the things we had a burp had at the top, or if you don't have anything at the top,
well, are you gonna go into the recording or
the recording he did? No, I didn't write that much about it. I was thinking now when we go over to the album history we can talk about that if you want. Yeah, I did mention the recordings were made in 1937 and 36. That's mostly it.
So he kind of recorded two batches. Like, first he went in and recorded some songs, which became a single of sorts.
Yeah, 7 Dates were singles at that time.
That was Terra Playing Blues and Love in Vain was a B-side, right? No?
No. Kind-Hearted Woman?
Kind-Hearted Woman, yeah. Kind-Hearted.
And those were played on the radio.
Yeah. And they sold, like, for the time, a lot of copies.
I mean, some people say a lot, some people say medium, which is weird. I feel at that time, I would say it's a lot, personally. 5,000 copies around Terra Playing Blues.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot. I mean, if I would sell physical copies today, even if that's not always done, like, but few website, 5,000 copies is a lot, I feel like. Yeah. Especially if you were like, especially in the neighborhood, you know people and perform.
Yeah, but I also like the, I wish I had the painting in front of me, because there's a cool painting of the recording session. Because, they recorded, the first time they recorded, recorded at a hotel.
Yeah, Gunther Hotel.
Gunther Hotel,
in San Antonio. Antonio, Texas.
Yeah,
that's how you say it. I think so. I've never been there. So.
No, it's in Texas. The second. Oh, well,
no, mind. It's in Texas.
Yeah, but never mind.
Geography, not our strong suit. We're from Sweden.
But he they had set up like the microphone, in front of him and like prepared everything, and then he just took it and moved it into the corner, and it was facing the corner while he was playing.
Yeah, and that was said so people wouldn't like, they thought he was maybe shy, but it was said that like if somebody saw him doing something he would turn away or stop playing.
Yeah and that's also like kind of adding to the kind of myth of him, like when he was playing live shows, if a person was looking at too much of what he was doing, he would like turn around and keep playing or like walk off the stage.
Yeah, and everybody's like, it's the devil, he can't show his secret devil magic.
Also like in the recording session, many believe he did it to get a better sound,
because he he seemed to know how it was on the radio because he seemed to have perfect pitch, how long the songs were and what you should focus on, it feels like. And wasn't it also because of that resonance he got that Keith Richards thought it was two guys?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gets that...
Yeah, it gets the bounce off the walls.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Kind of smart. Like one, it's just like taking the mic one step can change so much. It's like we're talking about like his guitar or singing skills. It's like one thing.
Yeah.
It's so interesting in music that you can do one thing that changes so much.
Yeah, and it's just... yeah, and like... It's also fun to hear like the recording process, like they recorded in a hotel, so he was in one room and like the mixer was in like the other.
It's so funny also to call it the mixer because they had like one knob
one knob.
And then they had, was it the technician slash producer that was at the record player and just dusting it?
Yeah, because they were cutting the record as they were recording.
Sometimes I feel like I can hear the bristles.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you could hear the bristles? Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I like that. Also talking about the devil conspiracy myth thing, is he was also known to always be well-dressed and or always having his clothes clean and tidy. And for people who don't understand, he was going from one city to the other city on hitchhiking down the roads and just walking or jumping trains, and he would always have a perfect suit or perfect clothes wherever he went. He was never dirty and never unkempt, and people also thought that added to the devil conspiracy. Like if I could walk wake every morning and just go out and my suit would be perfect, it's kind of like he's made a deal with the devil, of course.
I think that's more because he always had a place to stay.
He always had, he was a woman, I mean. He always had a place to stay, So, yeah, except for the recording, these recordings were made at the Gunter Hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the second ones were in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
But and that is what would become Volume 2, which is somewhat called. The one you can find on vinyl today is a reissue of King of Delta Blues Singers, and it's got a collection of both. So, yeah, so if you have it on vinyl, you probably have both volumes into one. But when it comes to this music, Viking, his music live and also on vinyl or like singles, he wasn't that well known as it at his time, right?
No.
He mostly played juke joints outside barbershops and street corners, and it sold moderately in his area.
Yeah.
So it wasn't till later in life like people would know his name. Mm. Because this came out in 1961. Why is that? He died in, what is it, 38? So why is that? Like 25 to 7, something? Almost 30 years.
Yeah, 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of crazy. No, not a lot of people outside of that group of people that heard him as alive and bought the singles because it was a craze of buying those blue singles. In the 60s.
Yeah, like...
Or 50s, 60s.
The 60s blues revival, you call it.
I mean, before this came, I mean, on a vinyl, a whole album. I mean, it's crazy that people didn't know his name. But there was one time he got played in public and he got some fame. Mm. What was it called, that thing?
Spiritual...
From spiritual to swing,
So... did you ever read his I forgot to talk to you about that, but did you ever read the, so I'm talking about John Hammond, not the one that resurrected dinosaurs, but that resurrected Robert
Johnson, who's a dinosaur. He worked at Columbia, I think, at the time.
Yes.
Which was acquired by Sony later in life, I think.
Yeah, so he was a talent scout. Pretty much that's what he started with. He is famous for like scouting out people like Billie Holiday and Bob Dylan and people like that.
But never heard the name.
No. But like a year after his death, I think.
Yeah.
He was putting together a concert like to honor like...
how music came from spiritual to swing, meaning jazz, blues, And especially, to be honest, he tried to get it out to white audiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're being crude. Because in those days, it was a little known as race records when it came to the black
And
demographic, which is crazy to me.
That's when you're interested. Interesting when you read his Wikipedia page, because he did a lot like for anti-segregation and like for the music industry and like
that's cool
stuff like that. That part is very interesting if you're reading that. But yeah, he put on this concert and he sent out like sent a man down to
some scouts
Mississippi and tried to find Robert Johnson, but unfortunately he had died by then
4 months earlier.
Yeah,
only which is kind of crazy. Like if he would have lived a couple of months more, who knows what could have been?
Yeah,
which is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
but because he died, John Hammond decided that he would put a gramophone. I'm not saying that. I wanted to say a turntable for no a gramophone on the stage and play two songs. Do you remember which ones?
Wasn't it the? I think it was the Preaching.
Yeah, Preaching Blues and Walking Blues.
Yeah, Preaching Blues and Walking Blues.
And he played those for the audience, and the audience was moved, so to say. Some people say they went crazy. Some people, but like they were really like moved.
Mm.
It seems like very intrigued, but he didn't quite get out there in fame even though that get
but that was just one evening, so
but that's kind of crazy. Like if he would have been there, what would have happened?
Yeah,
but instead after that, some years went more years after that, in 1961, where we're talking about 30 years later, this vinyl came out. And that's that Spiritual to Swing, that was much earlier than that was in the 50s, right?
No, that what the Spiritual Swing was 39.
It was 39. Yeah. So yeah, that's even earlier than this. Yeah.
So but John Hammond, he had gotten hold of all his recordings.
Yeah.
And they were under the Columbia Records, and by the time in the 60s, he was like a executive on.
Yeah,
on
and the blues revival was big then. Yeah. Yeah, and they wanted to make some money.
So yeah, but he did this like as a. I think as a passion project, like
the money is just a bonus.
Yeah, shut up.
But it's true.
Yeah, but you don't have to make it all about the money.
I'm sorry.
It's about the music, money.
It's about the music. No, but I do agree. I think it was a passion project.
He put together this record,
which came out like we said, 1961, and it wasn't. Commercially received very well or charted, but it did grow a big following, especially around not only in America but in England, UK. The blues train started walking up there too, with some people like Rolling Stones and Eric Clapton / Cream, who really like started there.
Yeah.
But also like they started to hear his music, and then. Like we mentioned, Keith Richards, just blown away. Like it's only one guy's playing, and what did Keith Richards say? He like he never needed to care about the other guy because he was doing it all by himself. Bob Dylan, he just was mind blown, and a lot of his verses just got inspired by Robert Johnson, and Eric Clapton still says to this day, like he's one of the most
soulful
like artists we ever had. His lyrics, his guitar is amazing. So I mean, a lot of the stuff, and that's why I said we're taking this at the top before mentioning these people, because they inspired and changed the landscape inspired. Today how we see music. I mean, today
both like Eric Clapton and Cream did covers,
Rolling Stone, Led Zeppelin
Led Zeppelin,
Fleetwood Mac even, more. And like not only covers but made their own original music with
but
these
we're
folks.
Gonna get to who more.
Yeah. And their original music with this like as a groundwork, how his Robert Johnson's music would be a groundwork for them, and now today even more music. So that's why I'm saying he did do so much for music in his small span of life.
Yeah, we can talk about one cover that kind of blew my mind.
Yeah. A certain antidote for strychnine.
No. That we're gonna talk about later. But I'm talking about the song "The Red Hot."
Red Hot Tamales thing. Tamales and the Red Hot. She's going for sale.
So
it's such a jazzy tune. Can we just? Yeah, like, it's a bop. It's such a bop.
It's a swing song.
Yeah, I love really it. Okay, sorry.
But yeah, so I grew up with a little known record called Blood, Sugar, Sex and Magic.
Of course,
by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
As a small child.
Yeah, I listened to that album when I was way too young.
So funny. The 90s, the good old days.
Yeah. So there's a song called They're Red Hot. And I always thought that was just a funny, like a funny wordplay on the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But like when we started researching, it turns out it was a cover by the Robert Johnson song.
Hot Tamales and the Red Hot. Yeah, she got them for sale.
And that kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand because you really like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and like that was right in front of you the whole while. And then like,
and I had no idea about Robert Johnson.
And I mean, like, not a whole century before, but like. Like 70, like a lot of years before.
Yeah, 60 years.
Robert Johnson lived, made music, which impacted you 60, 70 years later. Yeah. It's so amazing, man.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And that's what I'm saying.
Music history, man.
Yeah, music history, but that's what I'm saying. He impacted so much more, and that's what we're saying. Like, I think a lot of people, like, if you listen, and especially, we haven't even talked about rock and roll, like Elvis Presley and all that. A lot of the stuff he did, of course, is questionable in itself because there's a lot of his songs that were written and performed by black people before him. And if that's his decision or the label's decision to give him the music, that's all. Like, if I'm saying, oh, thank you, I'm stealing your music, I'm playing it, or the label's here, like, Elvis, play the music. That's, I don't know how that was. But still, a lot of the music that Elvis played, made by black the black music community, or he wrote himself, was from Robert Johnson, and a lot of that also. He did a lot. And I mean, Elvis Presley, he's so like, oh, he affected everything with music, but basically he's a big copycat in a sense, which is nothing wrong. Some people say the highest form of flattery is mimicry, so and if you're doing it from Robert Johnson, even though it's a shame that those people don't get their dues,
that goes like in like around and around in big circles.
Because
people forget. It's like,
especially nowadays, I feel like it's drifting more and more.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're not that old, but I still feel like it's gonna drift more and more.
It's
this
like
whole music
like
history.
Isn't there a saying about like you only remember three generations before you or something like that?
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Isn't it because you have like your dad or your granddad or mom, and then granddad, grandma?
Yeah.
That's like the
And your grandma has their parents, but it's like
they're maybe deceased before you, but they have stories of them and they'll tell you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how you'll get it. And then you're the last generation, like, and you're living your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So yeah, I think that's everything I had at the top. I'm sorry if it's sounding like I'm stressed or going fast. I'm just psyched. I'm really psyched. So I'm sorry, audience, if like all this. It's less like I've been waiting technically from the start of our podcast to do this.
Well,
so it's almost a year to our podcast.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's kind of a long time also in a sense. So that's also why I'm pumped. I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So, are you ready? To get into the songs.
Yeah, we're gonna get into the whole 16 songs.
Oh, just the 16 of the 29. This is half the songs he made.
Yeah.
Yet again, half.
And more than half.
Yeah, I mean, but like, it's around half. Or wait, are they more than 29 songs? Dun, dun, dun.
Well, aren't there 41 recordings?
42
recordings, yeah.
Alternate takes.
Oh my god.
42.
Yeah, my god, 42.
Yeah.
It's all you need.
Yeah.
It's the answer to life.
Yeah, of course. No, but So I mean, it's just crazy, like I said. So well, let's get into it with the first song, Crossroads Blues. So Viking, take it off.
Yeah, I mean, like, what song wouldn't you put on the first track of this album?
Yeah, I mean, it's
kind of like...
It's perfect for the story also with the devil.
But it really shows his incredible guitar playing and singing. Plus, it kind of ties into the whole myth about Robert Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Also that, just like how he plays guitar. We said he had long fingers, but still... Like, one person playing the rhythm, the bass line, and hen plucking, and then singing on top of it, which he does in these songs. And like you said, this song, his guitar skills is amazing. It feels like the guitar sometimes in, like, all the song, a lot of the songs, but, like, this song also has that weeping, that crying, like, it gets, you know, when he plays certain parts of it, and it's so good. So much emotion in his music, I feel like, especially this song.
Yeah. So there's a mention of a certain Willie Brown in this song.
Yeah. Which I also said in Crossroads, they have a character that's named and referring to Willie Brown.
Yeah.
In the movie, he's an harmonic player, and in real life, he was a guitar, right?
Yeah, I think so. He was a fellow Delta blues musician in the Johnson's time, and he was. Johnson liked Willie Brown very much, and he accompanied him and Sunhouse and the gang and traveled around. Rumors has it that Johnson specified Brown that was to be the first person to know about his death.
Oh, after Robert Johnson died?
Yeah.
So Willie Brown was the first to get to know.
No, Robert Johnson specified you should tell Willie Brown first.
In the song, you mean?
No, in real life.
In real life, like his last words, or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
It's a rumor, but it's
that's
a cool
the problem.
Thing.
Also, we've noticed it's his history is really like hard to pinpoint.
Yeah, it's oral history, so oral history is. I mean, oral history is kind of very.
But it's also the eldest history. It's how our ancestors did, man.
But.
So is that why he's in the song, Willie Brown? That he just liked him so much?
Yeah, probably not.
He was a mentor, and maybe, or like a role model.
It didn't seem, at least Willie Brown did make a deal with the devil, because there's no pictures left of him.
Willie Brown?
Yeah.
Huh.
So if you go to his Wikipedia page, there's only a headstone as the picture. And also, he recorded three 78
singles?
Shellac discs.
Mm.
That today only one exists. Like seven copies. Of.
God, that's crazy.
So he's kind of forgotten.
Yeah. But that's kind of also with, even though he didn't go the music route, Ike Zimmerman, like when in the Can You Hear the Wind Howl documentary, everybody was asked, oh, do you know Ike Zimmerman? And nobody knew.
Yeah.
But in that region, he was a great guitar player. And it's so interesting, like some things, if not recorded or lost to time, it will never be like...
Yeah.
And that's the whole philosophy thing, or like, did you even live if nobody knew about you? But also with music, it's like, how can I know now, 70 years later, like 60 years later, what this person made for music? It's so interesting and sad at the same time. Yeah.
And that's also like the interesting part, like that we get today, like because the couple the last couple of 10 years, I think, like I think man has become more obsessed by archiving everything.
Yeah,
and
everything's traceable now. Everything's easy to find.
Yeah, I mean, like, but also, like, because we're in the digital era, if you can get it into a digital format, it's easier to archive. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to have, like, shelves of, like...
Yeah, except vinyls.
Yeah, yeah. But
of course.
But that's just our poor souls.
Yeah.
We sold ourselves for vinyls.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a big collection. Back to Crossroads Blues, because I wanted to talk about the whole devil thing, right?
Yeah.
So Robert Johnson allegedly sold his soul to the devil. So what if him as a person did not sell his soul to the devil, and he just practiced and had a God-given talent, but somebody needed to help him? I think that when it comes to him writing music and making music, I think he just like marketed it. Like, this is marketing for him. Like, oh, everybody's talking about me. I sold my soul to the devil. Blues is the devil's music. I'll write. And it's a kind of blues classical talk about the devil. But from him, in that sense, it's a smart move. Especially like this song. This is like a part one of a trilogy about songs with the devil, because there's two more. Which talk about his story of him going to the crossroads and selling his soul. And I just wanted to talk about that, like, what is the crossroads? What does it mean? Is it an actual crossroads he went to sell his soul to the devil? And then if it happened or not, he still did it. Or was it the crossroads? Because we didn't mention this, but Robert Johnson was married twice. And the first time he had a wife who was pregnant with child, who passed away. Second time also. Pregnant with a wife that was pregnant, also passed away in childbirth, which was common. But still, if you think about his life, his life, he grew up and moving around a lot, and then trying to get like, love, and then it slipping away from him. Was the crossroads like him deciding what to do with his life and turn away from God or not, because he lost his faith in God? And then also just the crossroads, like, you have to make a choice in your life between good and evil. And that's kind of interesting in a sense. What is the crossroads in his life?
Also, like, the blues was the devil music at this time.
The devil!
That's what they were called, and it was very looked down upon. So, the devil also can be, like, the music itself. Like,
yeah, I get you.
So
the crossroads is like, should I choose between a life of music, which is the devil's music, or like a normal life? Yeah, that's kind of true. I just feel like it's interesting. Let's go over to Terraplane Blues.
Yeah.
So Terraplane Blues, we talked about, was the one that sold a lot.
Have you been driving around my Terraplane while I was gone?
We're going to talk about that. But first of all, what is a Terraplane? What is Terraplane?
It's a car?
Yeah, it's a car. We found a book called Love in Vain in our local library.
Yeah.
And in it, it has a picture of a Terraplane car with the awesome tagline / advertisement saying, on water, that's aquaplaning. In air, that's aeroplaning. Hot diggity dong, on ground, that's Terraplaning. I just like love that. It's stuck in my hand, especially if you can use hot diggity dong.
Yeah.
So it's so
this is a product placement song?
Yeah, and it's all, of course, it's product placement, and it's song about the car. Or is it, Viking? Is it a song about a car?
It's kind of a song about infidelity.
Yeah, it's a metaphor for sex, really. At least I'm not like saying having sex, but there's sexual innuendos.
Yeah, but also like this, like
cheating and stuff.
The line I was harking back to is like, who has been driving my car around when I was gone? Like, he travels around, and when he comes back, something.
Yeah, or like, flash. Like he's talking about a woman, but also the car, because he's saying, "Flash the lights, mama." But also the part about the infidelity, like the car battery is dead and the horn won't blow.
Yeah,
which is so, like, because somebody else has been driving the car. So yeah, it's kind of funny. But not only what the song is about, you know, when he howls in this one, probably I think it's in the chorus, like he has such a good howl when he goes up, and so good. So yeah.
And like we said, this was one of the first songs he recorded.
Yeah, this was one of the first in that first batch, but also on first of the day, right?
Yeah, but like the first single was Terraplane Blues.
Yeah. So crazy, man.
Yeah.
So you wanna come on in my kitchen.
Yes, because hey. It's raining outside.
Yeah, but I just mean, get in my kitchen, not anything weird. Okay, good.
Yeah. I'm gonna not touch your bag or something.
Oh, good. I don't know what's happened. Okay, talk
about.
Did
you get my reference? No, I like this song. It has like, it's very like. It has this pleading quality of like this like regaining lost love.
Mm.
And the guitar.
Do you think it's also a little unrequited love, maybe, in a sense? Not only like, because he's talking about a little two different women, like he's being with one but he wants another, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It can be true. But it also has this kind of weirdly muted guitar. I think the guitar.
So it's a bass and a guitar now.
No, a guitar.
Yes.
A
guitar.
The guitar on this track is kind of weird because it's. Did you get that?
How do you mean weird? In what sense? Because I feel like I like the guitar, especially like the low parts of it.
Yeah, but it's also like it feels very muted sometimes. Like it's not even there sometimes.
Are we gonna get into the whole conspiracy about the speed thing maybe now?
Oh no! Yeah, sure. I mean, haven't heard about this.
You haven't heard? Okay, I didn't write this down because I thought you, the master of all vinyl. So basically. This was also a thing with the deal with the devil thing.
Yeah.
So basically, his music was maybe in the 78 form sped up for some apparent reason.
Mm.
And that then affected him, his voice and guitar, and also gave then more myth to the devil because he was playing so fast. He was singing so fast. And nobody can play guitar so fast and so good. Without selling their soul to the devil.
Yeah, exactly.
So when this 1961 version came out, and then the reissue also, they had to slow it down, some people say, or return it to its original speed. And some people say, well, some things maybe got lost from the original recording because they mixed it up to a certain speed, and then the speed we do now is you're taking the speed sped up version and turning it down, so it's not like a normal version still left.
That's interesting.
So it's a whole thing.
Yeah,
but I just thought that was like it was a conspiracy.
But that's interesting.
So that could maybe be what you think you're hearing with the guitar, because mastering or mixing.
So, what you're saying, we need to get a whole original.
78, of course, and a gramophone. Let's do it.
Yeah, and so yeah, okay. To compare, like,
I honestly didn't think about if there was something different. I just noticed that it was more like he wasn't playing very, I don't know how to say, he's playing so much at the same time also.
Yeah.
But like high notes, he was playing more like slower and low. Notes and hand plucking and I think, and that's also maybe a difference.
Yeah, that's maybe it also. But it's something about like the guitar on this track that's like struck me as kind of weirdly.
Yeah. Also talking about this, what you're saying about coming into his kitchen with the love, except for like being a way of saying he wants a relationship, maybe, I think it's just also shows his like loneliness, because he's saying to a woman, come in my kitchen. Normally he would like get home to their kitchen, because he's a ladies man, of course. And I think him saying I want you to come home to me, in a sense, shows how much he was alone, especially with this whole story of his wife or wife's passing away and stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting. And this is what I talked about, like these songs when you're like, you don't really think what does, oh, come on in my kitchen mean. But it has a lot of like sexual innuendos in a sense, but also loneliness and emotion. And it's amazing.
Even if it's kind of like some of it are handpicked from like other blues songs. Like it feels weirdly self-biography.
Yeah, biographical.
There we go. Sometimes. Okay. And it's very nice.
Viking, would you want to see a biopic or biopic with Robert Johnson? Depending on what you think it should be said.
Biopic.
Okay. Let's I would like on. To see a biopic with Robert Johnson, especially about...
And I would like to stab you.
And especially about this song, Walking Blues, because a biopic about Walking Blues would be interesting.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
So did you see that this song was written by the legendary Son House?
Yep, the blues standard written.
Mm. And it's so interesting that they use that term, blues standard.
Yeah.
Like it's a standard for every blues musician to know, in a sense, then.
Yeah. I think it's more like it's like a song that many built their song upon. Because that's what I had the feeling about. Like a lot of like blues and like folk music did also.
They have the same standard. I get
they have melodies or they have like stuff and they build on top of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they mean with the blues standard.
Do you think this is the most famous version of the song?
I don't know.
It's
I guess that's debating if Son House or Robert Johnson is the more popular blues musician.
Yeah, that's true. But it feels like this song, even though it was written, it really suits Bob, not Robert, of course, he's our friend. It suits Bob a lot because he used to move around a lot and live his life on the road. And I also googled like what some of the meanings in the song were, because there are some phrases I've never heard, especially with the language being old in some words. So like riding the blind. Do you know what riding the blind means, Viking? Did you Google it? Or because I know.
Tell me, because I know what riding means, at least.
Ah, that's good. So riding the blind in this context is actually jumping a train, especially the part like where the engine is, or like where you can jump on and there's only like, you know, very close to the engine and there's a handrail. And... this song is basically about living on the road, jumping the trail, and also he's talking about women being like an Angelin. I can say it, Angelin. It's a certain clock that Robert Johnson mentions in the song. I can't say the name for this clock, sorry, but he says also that the women move with the precision of the clock.
Yeah, and that was also a line I think he stole from another blues musician.
But I kind of, appropriated, not stolen. Okay. No, but it's kind of...
He lent it.
Yeah, he loaned it.
Yeah.
And I like that way of saying, like, not that about women are like, but I mean, like, how you can pick up a picture with, like, that, and because I didn't know there was a timepiece, but when I Google, I get to know.
Mm.
It's kind of nice. It's very off its time.
But the real question of this song is, who is Bernice?
Who is Bernice? Of course, it's his love, his life. I think, I don't know, was it a certain girl? Did you find something?
No, I didn't find anything. Before I Googled Robert Johnson and Bernice, and I couldn't find anything, and now I Googled Son House and Bernice, and I didn't find anything.
No, I don't know. It feels like it could be like anybody.
Yeah, it's probably somebody like, met on the road.
Yeah, it's like, hello, my name is John Smith. You know, it's just like a placeholder name. So, yeah. You got anything else to say about the Walking Blues?
No.
Okay, so let's talk about Last Fair Deal Gone Down.
And about rabbit holes, these records goes down.
Just
song.
Robert Johnson as a person is a rabbit hole in itself of Google, and I love it. Yeah. That's how we found Crossroads, and that's just amazing. But this song is crazy in a sense, because it leads you down... Yeah, it leads you down essays, man.
So there's a line called, or he ends his like almost all verses in the song.
Yeah.
That's Gulfport Island Road.
Yeah,
and when you Google that, you find an essay, pretty much an essay about this song.
Yeah, and only mostly about the part of Gulfport Island Road.
Yeah, and it talks about like. The stigma of the blues musicians, that most of it was like nonsense nonsense words that didn't mean something.
Yeah,
and he kind of digs it down and take this sentence as an example and really digs down to it, and like it seems like it referenced to an railroad company.
Yeah, I think that's what I kind of found also.
Yeah, it was a hell of a read, if I say so.
I kind of skimmed it.
Yeah,
but it was interesting.
I read it, but it also was very like.
It was hard to understand, but I think it's also because of the geography in a sense.
Yeah, and also it was very academically written, so it was.
Yeah, that's also a turn off sometimes when reading.
It was kind of hard to follow, but.
It's so funny that something written academically is hard to follow when it technically should be easier to follow.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun.
Yeah. no, but it's like it's hard to follow when you're not. Like in tune to the to the like subject, but anyways, it referred to railroad company that took in like both white and black prisoners. I think worked
cool.
at the railroad and treated them very badly. So, and that I mean, you can see it in the like in the lyrics also about that.
Yeah, but also. What I found is that when he's talking about like going from, because he's talking about we couldn't drink here, but we had to go to this side to drink. It's like also about like the laws at that time being because Mississippi were or oh God, where he was a dry state. Mississippi is a state, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I did it. So that's why I'm like,
they
is it
had
a state?
To go to Arkansas.
Yeah, I Arkansas.
Think.
And
I think to get
but also
rowdy.
This, but also this, yeah, rowdy. But also this, he's talking about. He doesn't say juke joint. He says some other word.
Barrel or house.
Yeah, and that means like juke joint, and where, and also like where you gamble, and work, and have romances. But also. I don't know if this is important, but like the Kanye, the word deal gone down or where the deal goes down.
The fair deal gone.
Yeah, but I mean just that part. Yeah. It comes from a card game called Georgia Skin I found on the internet. And I don't like, and I tried to Google Georgia Skin card game. I got nothing.
Okay.
I mean, like, what does that mean? Is it something certain like to the card game and then them playing cards and then gambling? Mean deal gone down? It's like, what does it, or does it just mean like it's a cool way of saying it?
For me, I kind of stuck on like the whole like you're in prison and you work for the railroad and the like the it's kind of like it's kind of like a almost sarcastic like the last fair deal the gone down your sentence.
Yeah, I get you.
Kind of like that, but I don't know.
It could be that, yeah.
That's what pops into my head, at least.
Like it's the last fair deal gone down. It's kind of in like in the movie Crossroads, like when they were captured, and the police said, "Well, you can get out here and be that guy, sheriff's problem." And it's and the sheriffs took the girl's wallet. It's technically a fair deal, but still it's not. Yeah. So it's the last fair deal gone down. Before getting into other territory. It's kind of fun. So yeah. But now we're going to go to the 320 blues.
Yeah.
Which is not like 420. It's 320, which is something else entirely. Mm. I didn't know what this was. Did you know before Googling what a 320 means?
I kind of guessed, but not really.
So, were you right when you guessed that it was about ammunition?
Yeah.
It seems like the Winchester company made these bullets.
Right.
So, fun fact, in Supernatural, the characters are called Sam and Dean Winchester.
Anyways.
Isn't it a little funny how the wheel turns?
Okay, this song draws heavily from a Skippy Ames song from 1931 called 22 and 20 Blues,
yes.
Which is kind of funny because he's like, I'm going to do it better. I'm going to call it 32 and 20 Blues.
And the next one is going to be 420 Blues. 420 Blues. Yeah, are the songs, the other songs, probably around the same subject? Like the song, it seems to be about his baby cheating on him, and he's gonna get his gun, or weapon to scare off either the one she's cheating with, or punish her, maybe.
Yeah.
Is maybe the other songs like that?
Yeah, I haven't heard the other song. So I just took this for fact.
Yeah, that's good. All from everything from the internet is fact. Yeah.
Doesn't he? This is the song he talks about Gatling gun, right?
Yeah. He says Gatling gun because he says something like, "I'm gonna come with my 320."
Yeah.
And then like, he or she, he's saying it like them has a Gatling gun which is stronger than his.
Yeah.
So in a sense, you could take these metaphors of guns and saying like, "My love for you is making me so angry, I'm gonna kill you or the guy you're cheating on."
Yeah.
But then seeing that the one you're cheating on with's love is stronger than my 320, so it's so strong, it's a Gatling gun, which is actually just like, my love is this much, but his love is this much more, which is a way of like, you know, mine's bigger thing, but it's kind of a comparison thing, maybe. It's kind of fun in a weird way. It's kind of weird.
Kind of reminds me of a Nick Cave song that's called Running Scared. That's pretty much about him running away with his girl, and he's always scared that the man she loved before is gonna come back and take her back. And the song ends just with that.
Kind
of
cool.
Yeah, it's kind of funny also.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. I found that weird internet fact, and I'm kind of weird. Just wanted like to talk about it, like, why did they write it like this? Because they wrote like, according to this song, adultery for women at the time was an appalling crime to commit. But why only women? Was
they were like the like.
I know, but like, wasn't it a problem if a guy also committed adultery?
Not the same punishment.
Man, times are weird. Yeah. History is weird.
That's also like, also that has like with divorce and everything, like a woman can't get divorced.
It's it's a whole thing. That's one thing I always like with the joke when I watch a time travel show or movie and it's a little comedy-esque. They're like, so we're going to go back in time. Where do you want to go? And let's say it's a man and a woman, and they're like, let's not go to these periods because it's going to suck for me. But the guy probably is like, let's go here, you know, before thinking. It's kind of fun, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting.
And it tilts it on its head. Doctor Who has some episodes like that, which is kind of funny. Mm. So, we're going to go over to Kind-Hearted Woman Blues.
Yeah.
When you say it like that, is it Kind-Hearted Woman Blues? Is it made by a kind-hearted woman?
No, it's the blues about kind-hearted women.
Okay, sure.
But that's always.
Yeah, I know. So talk to me.
It's not a 3220 that made that blues song.
I know.
It would be funny if he just fired the gun to introduce and that was the song.
So yeah, talk to me about the Kind-Hearted Woman.
He does some great singing on the song. This is one of the songs. He goes up very
abruptly, maybe.
But he shows off his vocal range because he goes up very high and then goes down very low.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the songs you can hear those if you're listening to those tones we talked about, microtonal. Because especially in these recordings, somehow I actually think you can hear the microtones better in all these old recordings than in new music, somehow. Because also old music is slower in a sense, so I think it's easier. But this, and I wrote a Gabriel classic of this podcast. I love the oohs. When there's an ooh or an ah in a song, or a sha-na-na-na-na also, but especially oohs and ahs. And the oohs he does, perfect. Yeah. The guitar also I like.
Yeah,
I mean, it's Robert Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, this is why it's hard to talk about this record like by song basis, because it's like.
Yeah, but also because number one, we're not musicians. Number two, we don't see what he's doing, so we're like, he's maybe doing that and this, and then five more things at the same time, and we're like, that one thing was good.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's so crazy, man. I don't have a lot to say about this song.
No, not me either.
Yeah, so let's go over to If I Had...
The greatest song name.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a good rock name, a rock song name.
Yeah, but If I Had Position of Judgment Day.
Yeah, I Had Position over Judgment Day. It's so good. It's like if he was God for a day.
And like the first like verse is really good, but yeah, and here we come into like the rhyme scheme we were talking about before,
Which I didn't think about at all, to be honest.
So this song and like a lot of other songs on this album forthcoming uses kind of these like this rhyme scheme, which I think is very common in blues music, which is like you have the same line twice, and the third line you rhyme at the first two lines. I think it's used very, very well in this song for a bit. I think it shifts a little towards the end, but this song has also some incredible guitar playing on it.
Yeah, I didn't notice at all the rhyme scheme, but when you were looking at this song and like one else, like I didn't think like it was a rhyme scheme, because like something can rhyme with having a scheme.
Yeah,
and then I
don't know. I don't know if it is a rhyme scheme per se. I couldn't find it when I looked up for rhyme schemes.
It's maybe just not a scheme, but a template.
Yeah, but it's like it's like a pattern a lot of musicians use when they write lyrics. So.
But when I noticed it, it was kind of, oh, nice. It was cool to see. I like the guitar and the song too. I mean, it's so hard to say something more than I just like the guitar. Like but always when he does something, going from when he does like slide and he goes into rhythm and does hand plucking, I just love the changes, and especially like the slide. We don't have a lot of slide guitar today, it feels like. We need more.
Yeah, more slide. Well, wasn't there sliding guitar in in League with Dragon?
Yeah, it was slide guitar, but not with a bottleneck thing.
No.
So it was only slide guitar. It wasn't
It wasn't that bluesy.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, we're gonna go over to the other one. Preaching Blues.
Up Jump the Devil.
No, Preaching Blues.
No, Up Jump the Devil.
No, Preaching Blues.
Up Jump the Devil.
So it's called Preaching Blues in parentheses.
Oh my God, you can't do it either.
Parentheses. Parentheses?
Yeah, but you screwed it up the first time.
Parentheses.
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 Anyways.
Up Jump the Devil. So yeah, this song is, I think it's about his wife. Yeah, he's talking about the passing of his wife and his trouble with the heartache of that, and then going into alcohol, I feel like.
Yeah.
Which is kind of heavy. I didn't know it was that emotional first.
Yeah.
Because it's like, but it's kind of emotional, kind of deep.
Yeah, and it has this like frantic nature of this. The song has a very frantic nature, like he's playing and singing.
Yeah,
and also he kind of uses this kind of a preacher's voice, I think, I would say.
Yeah, he does when he's talking a little. Is that what the part you're meaning?
Yeah, no, also when he's singing.
He I didn't think about it. Yeah. I just thought about the talking part, but maybe.
For me, it kind of feels like he puts on kind of a, like a preacher character in a sense when he's talking, and that adds a lot to the song.
Yeah.
Also, one of my favorite bands. I don't know if this is fact or
fiction.
Fact or fiction. But Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds has a song called "Up Jump the Devil."
Yeah,
and it seemed kind of inspired by this song.
Ah, cool.
And it's it's cool.
Them Bad Seeds at it again.
Yeah. Also, I like the I think it's the last verse where he talks about I won't repeat it because I can't repeat it because it's so many oohs and ahs.
Yeah.
But he kind of talks about I can study the rain. He talks about like I can start to drive my blues, and then and he ends it with like I can stay out all day, and I just like the concept of him being out in the rain studying
it. I get you.
I
didn't think about that. Kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a cool.
It's like our brains work differently.
Yeah. It's a cool lyric.
Yeah. So we're gonna go over to the song When You Got a Good Friend.
I don't have a good friend. I don't know what you're talking about.
I like the song too. He hangs on the words in a different way, I feel like, in the song.
Yeah.
Because it's, I don't know if he or like hangs or like just stays on the note in a different way, maybe.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's like, it's a kind of positive song. It's not a positive song in a sense, but it's also kind of, it has a kind of a positive message at least.
I think his good friend probably at the time or a lot of the times were Johnny Shines.
Yeah.
The guy that is very prominent in the documentaries, both of them, because or he...
Willie Brown.
Yeah, but I think I'm just saying Johnny Shine because when he was always traveling with him a lot more than other people, and also would save him from stuff, like save him from fights when he would pick up somebody's girl and stuff. And I think like, and he would always come after Robert, even if Robert maybe didn't want it, because Robert would like, oh, let's meet up, let's go to Arkansas, and then the next day, when Johnny wakes up, Robert is gone down to New Orleans or something like, and Johnny always just came after, and that feels like a good friend sometimes.
Yeah.
So that positive message could be true.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
You want to go over to some rambling?
Yeah, I can go to rambling on my mind, even if I haven't written anything. Yeah. There's nothing on my mind.
I feel like when we're saying rambling, I'm like, it's a Hoyt Axton song. He's rambling.
Well,
one could dream, but yeah, this is rambling.
Guess what he got his inspirations from?
Yeah, maybe. This is rambling on my mind. I feel like this song is quite, I mean, a lot of them are somewhat famous if you've heard the other artists, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and stuff. And because this one is quite covered in context to other songs.
Yeah.
Was it Eric Clapton who did a rambling? I think.
Yeah, he probably done.
It feels like he made a whole album about Robert Johnson. So when it comes to Eric Clapton, but yeah, this song, it feels to me like it could be about him, Robert Johnson's son, and the mother of the child. Like his thoughts about life, and you know that he's talking about rambling and walking away or something, and it's maybe him running away so he won't. Because he's saying, I got mean things on my mind or something. Mm. Yeah, and I think he's talking about maybe like thoughts to either hurt them, not physically, but like, you know, he feels maybe he is cursed, or if he sold his soul to the devil, like he's got mean things on his mind and he doesn't want to be there, so he runs away, even though he came with money for the child and stuff. So yeah, I feel like maybe that's what the song is about. Like he's just thinking about life and talking about the... his son, because he's saying something about like the blues for a child or something. I don't remember the words. So yeah, I don't know. But you don't have any?
No. But I agree with you.
Oh, so if I would have said this is about I don't know, space Nazis, then you were like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is a song that foretells the Second World War.
Yeah, of course. No, but I think that's what it's about, and I like the song. It's a good song. But now we're going to go over to Stones in My Passway.
Or The Stones in My Passat.
Oh my god, I'm having glitchy problems.
Yeah, are you making glitch music over there?
Yeah, I was making actual like an 8-bit glitch music for a while. Kind of cool. So Stones in My Passway.
No, Passat. It wouldn't be funny if Robert Johnson just had made a lot of like... lot of car songs.
Passat.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people get this joke, man.
No, but that's fine.
And you're like, oh, you do go bad jokes, Gabriel. You're so bad at telling jokes. You're like, Stones in My Passat. Is that even an international car, Passat?
Yes.
How do you say it? You're saying it in a Swedish language. I feel like Passat.
Passé?
Is it French?
Yeah, I think it's French.
I mean, God, we don't know anything about cars, man. No. So yeah, Stones in My Passway. This also has some real cool guitar, and it feels like this is this song could be about.
Oh no, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you. We really don't know anything about cars.
It's not even a car.
No, it's a, not a car manufacturer.
It's a type of car.
Yeah, it's a type of... it's a Volkswagen made a Passat.
Oh my God. We're so uncultured.
Yes. So I'm sorry for the interruption. Go on.
So yeah, this song, Stones in My Pathway. So like it's a cool guitar, and it feels like it's about a man. And the man, of course, is Bob, asking like the power to affect people, souls, or like I'm saying with this devil magic. But now he's lost the power of his own body because he's talking about the dark things and stuff. Where the stones are and they're hindering him in life, kind of. And I just thought that was could be something like that. He's talking about his lost power.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like the song. It has a really like ominous feel to it.
Yeah, really ominous.
Yeah, and I really like the line like "My enemies have betrayed me, have overtaken poor Bob at last."
Yeah, see, Bob, he's our friend. Yeah. Poor Bob, save poor Bob. So yeah, are we over to Traveling Riverside Blues?
Yes, let's go.
This song he also sings about just, you know, parting it up at juke joints and having a good time.
Traveling around.
Yeah. And also squeezing the lemon.
Yeah. So there's a phenomenal line that is called, you can squeeze my lemon till the juice run down my leg.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. And Led Zeppelin kind of took that into, made it.
Their song Squeeze the Lemon.
Yeah. Made their own thing out of it.
Yeah, and for everybody who is very grown up, certain males of the species have something you can squeeze, and there's some juice that comes out. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't say it. It was Bob who said it. Robert Johnson said it, not me. I'm just translating it. But, I mean, it's kind of, to be funny but also serious, it kind of shows you how they had to encrypt the messages in the music. Even though, you know, it's a wink at the camera kind of thing. But, I mean, if he wouldn't said, you know what I mean after, I maybe wouldn't have known what he meant, to be honest. I mean, not maybe this line, but some of the other lines have, you know, have sexual. And that's the thing with blues. Some lines are like, could be anything. It's a lot of hidden messages sometimes. It's kind of cool if you like that, even if those hidden messages are sex. And not like devil worship or shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We're gonna go to another song called Milk House Calf Blues.
Ooh.
What is this name, man? And also, did you find the same thing that I found, that this song, just because I just talked about sex, is a sexual innuendo galore? Like this song. This song has so many, so much sexual innuendo in it.
This is a song of its time, and it has not aged well.
No.
And it's also very funny because it's. It has,
or it has aged well in a sense.
it's kind of funny because he had been covered to death also. Like Eric Clapton done a cover of it. Like everybody's done a cover, and it's like, it's a weird because pretty much he's like using cow as a word for women.
Yeah. It's not good.
No.
So yeah, let's go from this, and I want to just take you back. We started this album with a Crossroads Blues, which I call the part one of a trilogy with the Devil. We're gonna come to part two here with Me and the Devil Blues, and this keeps talking about this story about the singer, of course, Robert Johnson, waking up to the devil knocking on the door and telling him it's time to go. So this is a continuation, like it's Crossroads Blues, Me and the Devil Blues, and the last song we're going to talk about in a while. And it's brings home that devil theme. And if you're like, want to say concept album or like have a story in it, that's good that these songs are layered like they are, or put where they are, I think, these devil songs. The devil. When we get a soundboard, I'm going to have a Kathy Bates devil button.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that. What did you think of Me and the Devil Blues?
It's a very interesting like premise of a song, and like it like what he talks about, but it also goes very like dark when he sings, "I'm going to beat my woman until I get satisfied."
Yeah,
which is like, whew.
It's really of its time, and it. I mean, he. But as far as I know, he and we found out he didn't really. He wasn't a bad man towards women, except. Not in sense of like hitting them, but he did fool around a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe wasn't the best emotionally stable man in that sense, but it didn't seem like he physically harmed anybody, no. As far as we know.
No, not what we know of.
Yeah, but he could have also been a douchebag for all we know.
Yeah, but also like kind of like the last verse seems to like not like. Redeem him for it, but he kind of like he speaks as he understands what
he's doing
is evil.
Yeah,
because he says like, "You may bury my body, oh, down by the highway side, so my old evil spirit can get on a gray greyhound bus and ride."
Yeah, and that's kind of the rhyme scheme we were talking about in a sense, a short rhyming.
No, that's just an AB rhyme.
But it's a rhyme.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a scheme.
Yeah.
No, but I agree. I agree. Yeah. Like, he will be going around and just not bothering anybody. So, yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, he confirms, like, I'm evil. I'm an evil old spirit.
I'm the devil.
Yeah.
And talking about the devil, we're going to go to the last song.
Yeah.
Hellhound on My Trail. So this is the part 3 of the Devil Saga.
It's also another mind blown.
Yeah, this is a covered song too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's not what blew your mind? Yes. Is there something else?
Yes, there's a special cover of this.
Tell me about it.
Okay, we're going to start with this. So I heard this song a lot.
Yeah.
It's on the third record
of
a very famous musician that we have met.
Yeah, and also he searched for some antidote for strychnine.
Yeah,
so plug. So wink.
So the Mountain Goats, and especially Jörnar O'Neill, actually made a cover on this on his third album.
God, that's a long time ago.
Yes. And I listened to that countless of times, and I
didn't know.
No, I didn't know.
You were a sweet summer child.
And then I heard the title of like, "Hello on My Trail." Wait, what? And then
wait, did Robert Johnson cover a Mountain Goat song? Like, wait, he traveled for time.
Yeah, like so wait. I know Jörnar O'Neill was like a prevalent music of our time, but. Not that much.
Like Robert Johnson terminated time traveled here, and that's the first thing he heard and went back. Okay, we'll make that Terminator 55. We'll do that, the 55th movie. Yes. No, but yeah, I found that was cool, I also want to explain why we're saying, or I'm saying, antidote for strychnine. Like I said with the poisoning, I tried to find if the song on the. Mountain Goats album. I want to say Here Be Dragons. That's not it. What is it?
The album?
Yeah.
The song?
Yeah. The album is...
Which album are you talking about?
The Dragons one.
In League with Dragons.
We talked about Antidote for Strychnine there, but we didn't know, and I didn't think, if there could be a Robert Johnson, because now we know he was presumed poisoned. So there's maybe more than this song connecting them together, which is kind of fun.
We just need to ask him next time we see him.
Yeah, of course.
I'm gonna drop that. But I had a because you ruined it.
I'm sorry, I ruined everything.
I had a whole like Terminator reference because this is kind of a Terminator song.
I get you. Yeah. I get you. I already understand.
Yeah, I understand.
Oh my God, that's kind of funny.
I want to turn you to a specific lyric on this song. That's blues falling down like hail. I love that line. That's like the thing from this song when I heard it, like the original. I was gonna say the original song, but the Mountain Goats versions of this song is like blues falling down like hail. But yeah, so it's an incredible line.
Okay.
Okay. You don't care.
I do care. Yeah. But it's, I didn't really think about that line per se. That's maybe why. But also, I'm just trying to think about which song of this. I think this trio of devil songs are maybe those three are maybe, I think, maybe the most famous. Like Crossroads Blues, Hellhound, On My Trail.
Yeah, probably.
I feel like Me and the Devil Blues. I feel like this one could be really like well known in a sense, because I feel like I've heard it some, like maybe in some show or something. Maybe because of Supernatural and when, you know, they had Robert Johnson and stuff like that. Yeah. But the way he plays this and sings, this is also like, again, so eerie.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when he plays the guitar, it feels really like wind going through trees.
Yeah, also like, because it kind of feels also like he's taking on a character here, because he has this kind of howl to his voice.
Yeah, yeah, really. And also the emotion in his voice. Yeah. Actually, like, you can believe that he's being chased and needs to keep moving to save his life. I mean, it's kind of amazing. It's really good. So, yeah. So, those are all the songs. All the songs.
Actually, I have written down Love in Wayne Blues.
Yeah, but it's not on here.
No, I know.
Shame on you. Yeah. When I Googled, somebody said, some website said Love in Vayne was actually preaching blues. I'm like, no.
You, sir, you are wrong.
Yeah, really. So yeah, let's talk about some lasting impressions of this album. So yeah, you got anything? Hit me with it. Hit me with your best shot.
I mean, like...
Okay, I have one.
Okay.
Okay, I have said this at the top, and I know it's annoying, but still. Lived till he was 27, made 29 songs, only 2 known pictures, big urban myth guy, not a lot of... credit real information known. I mean, we've mentioned some, and the in the documentaries mentioned some, but still, it's still kind of hazy. And he still affected most music till 2020, and he was born 1911. He died 1938. In 18 years he would that's 100 years ago, he would have affected basically 100 years of music.
That's some lasting impression.
Yeah, that's kind of funny and true. And I'm too serious to laugh at it too much. But it is true. You're certainly right, honestly. And I just found that is, honestly, that's the best tagline we could have said. It's a lasting impression. And honestly, I think that's all we could say about the album.
Yeah, I mean, like...
It's just amazing. Like, this is half his category of songs, basically, around, like, half. Yeah. Discography, I was gonna say, but yeah, catalog, true. And it's just amazing. And I just want people to appreciate where it comes from, and especially like we've been talking before a little when we delved in a little with this whole race stuff, which is stupid, when we talked about Childish Gambino's Awaken My Love, and now like it was called Race Records and everything was segregated. It's just also like, and rock and roll, like with Elvis, like those artists are not well known or didn't get their due diligence at that time, and I hope they get it now and this time, and I hope we can like spread that information, especially to the young people today, which have all these like smartphones and technology to look up everything so easy now, really.
And also like that reminded me when you talked about like segregation and musical segregation. There's an interesting like story on John Hammond's Wikipedia, where he tries to go and find a certain artist at a record store and can't find it because it's a white people record store.
Huh.
So he has to go down to Harlem. And he like starts to frequently go down to Harlem and he's not really that welcome there, but
yeah, because that's the thing that's kind of interesting. Yeah. We saw a little in Crossroads, the movie, like there was a certain juke joint slash bar that Willie Brown character would go to, and the white kids would go to one.
Yeah,
but when they came into the one where Willie Brown was, they were also like not welcome, and that's understandable because both sides had a certain way of looking at each other, but, and that's so interesting.
But yeah, so like the thing of like if you went to the white the record store for white people, you couldn't find the black musicians.
Yeah, so which is crazy. Yeah, it's amazing how times have changed, but still not sometimes. And I hope we're gonna get forward together. So yeah, so we're over with this episode. But we have some future episodes.
Yeah, so it's my turn. Finally, it's my turn.
Yeah. So yeah, if you haven't noticed, every time we do a bonus episode, the person that has a bonus episode gets to just move their original episode. So I've been hogging it all to myself. You just have to get some bonus ideas, man. Yeah. I already have like three more bonus ideas.
Well, the first one was my idea.
So. No.
No.
I'm just joking with you. It was. I'm just trying to steal your ideas. I'm the Simon and you're the Garfunkel. Remember that joke? That's an old one.
Then I'm gonna be your Stan Lee.
Oh my god. The new joke is gonna be who's the Phineas and who's the Billy Eilish. Who's the Phineas and who's the Billy? Oh my god!
When they get into
like the Simon Garfunkel arguments.
I want to see like. 5-10 years from now when they have like lawsuits each other who owns the music.
Oh my god, I hope they don't.
No, I neither, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised either.
I hope not. You're such a pessimist. Okay, are you finding your music?
Yeah, I'm finding my music. Oh, it's my fine. God, I can talk and search on Spotify at the same time.
Oh my god, you weren't prepared for this. What are you? Are you even a professional podcaster?
Well,
okay, so tell me, introduce me to the next album.
So we've done an album that was very important for music history.
Yeah. What, this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I'm just joking. I'm joking. Yeah, this one.
Yes. So now we're gonna do an album that's very important for my musical history.
Cool. Egoistic.
No,
it's fine.
I've been talking about. I've been reading. Acid for Children, Fleas, Memoirs. So I want to do a Red Hot Chili Peppers album. Yes.
Okay. Can before you do this, what's the acronym for Red Hot Chili Peppers? And can you say it? Because
RHCP.
Yeah. I just want to know.
Okay.
Good.
RHCP.
It doesn't work. Okay.
So the album I picked. I think it's kind of like an underrated album, or like I never hear.
How many albums have they made? I know we're gonna get into this, but do you know on top of around about?
I just 9-10, I think.
I would have thought a little more. Yeah, but yeah. Okay. So yeah, tell me about it.
So the album is One Hot Minute, and I think this. I don't hear people talking about this album, but it's one of my favorite. Also, it has some connection to the music world at large. So we're gonna talk about that.
Nani? Show me the picture.
It's 1 hour 8 minutes.
Ah, cool. I like the artwork.
Yeah,
it's very cute, but
great art. Yeah, it's kind of that style of like also the Offspring Americana kind of that kind of art style.
Yeah, it does a little. It's a little, I want to say cartoony, a little like a caricature, but less.
Yeah, it has this kind of Betty Boop.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's honestly very, very old style. So One Hot Minute with Red Hot Chili Peppers.
From 1995.
Yeah. Oh my God. The good oldies. So yeah, we're going to take that on the next episode. And if you want to hit us up on social media, we're the Record Swappers everywhere. And you can email us at therecordswappers@gmail.com. Mm. Viking's personal Instagram is vinylgamer.
Yes.
Mine is bartholomew.bell. And also, I just want to say, if somebody doesn't know why we just say those, we just want to.
Yeah.
We do us.
I like them followers.
Yeah.
I don't really care, but I like them followers.
Yeah. I just remember that we said we were going to do it, so we've done it every time. Yeah. Traditions. So yeah, hope you have a nice time listening to the podcast. Just hit us up whenever you want, and we'll swap at you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.